There's a few reasons that I'm so motivated to work with secondhand shoes. Just the mass of waste that's available. There's just not really a system in place at the moment for post-consumer waste. And I think there's a lot of problems surrounding that, whether it's how the communication, people don't know how to recycle their shoes, people don't know how to clean and look after their shoes. There's just such resource of waste that's not going anywhere anytime soon. So if I can make some sort of dent in that for good, you know, create beautiful, creative, thought-provoking products that are not made from virgin materials, then I think that's
today we're here joined by Helen Kirkham. Helen Kirkham is a talented artist and designer known for her innovative approach to creating wearable art. Her primary medium of choice is used and discarded pairs of shoes. She's highly regarded as a pioneer in the world of footwear, as she found a way to take these old, unwanted shoes and actually recycle them to new pairs. Helen is also a businesswoman running her own sustainable design studio that has collaborated with the likes of Gucci, Lacoste, Adidas, Asics, Reebok, Timberland, Per Gottersson, Bethany Williams, even Takashi Murakami. Recently collaborated with Lime for her a most recent runway show in London, and right now she's at the Birkenstock headquarters, apparently. So that's some more collaborations in the way. How are you, Helen?
Hello, what a great intro. I'm good, thank you. I'm really good. Yeah, I'm at the Birkenstock studio space. They've set up a space in Shoreditch that will run for a year. And it's basically a space where they invited us to be the residents here. So we're like the first artist in residence in the space. And we are currently making some furniture from waste Birkenstock materials.
Wow. First furniture pieces that you worked on?
Yeah, so we made a like a beanbag kind of seat for London Design Fair last September. We actually worked with an amazing interior design studio called 2LG Studio, who are based in London, and they invited us to be part of their exhibition, which was called You Can Sit With Us, and they basically invited different artists and designers to design a chair. So that was our first dipping our toe in the water of furniture.
Wow.
And we really liked it because I think now we have a kind of interesting technique and a way to utilize the materials. And we work a lot with leathers, like they kind of translate very naturally into home wear and products. So, that was our first one. So when Birkenstock approached us for this project, I really wanted to make another piece of furniture. So managed to wangle it so I could do that.
Wow. I do see you kind of exploring different almost like mediums, I guess, within your own lane, but I feel like sometimes you're put into this box of like footwear. But like, for example, your most recent collection, like you had all sorts of different pieces from outfits to like bags that were super interesting. I love the bags with the shoelaces. Those were crazy to me. Like how?
Yeah.
I mean, to me, it's like how long does that even take to make a bag?
Well, it's so interesting because that was exactly what we kind of realized as well at the beginning. We were working primarily with shoes and making shoes, which is a great. It's super easy to understand, but we realized as we were going through the process that we had like tongue linings, for example, from sneaker tongues that we weren't using in our production, or shoelaces that we weren't using in production. So the reason we actually developed a lot of the bags was so that we could find a use for other materials that were coming through our system, basically, in our kind of recycling process. So that's why we developed, the shoelace bags. And then we also developed now a shoelace kind of slip-on as well, which is all woven shoelaces. And then it has the aglets of like the end of the shoelaces, just like crazy sticking out of the shoe. I think those sort of processes, it's hard to quantify like how long a specific thing would take you to do. But a lot of our work is so labor intensive. I mean, it's really always a labor of love, like putting in all those hours to make sure it looks the way we want.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess that's what allows you to really be able to like take that and approach different completely mediums per se, and go into furniture and because you do have a history of like knowing how to make stuff with your hands. Take us back to like the beginning, like after you graduated, you worked for a while for Adidas, then you consulted a bit for Yeezy, but tell us, how did you kind of end up here at this point, right?
Well, I don't know. No, I think I studied footwear at BA and then a master's in footwear as well. So I think I had quite a linear start to the process, where I was like, this is, you know, I'm studying how to make a shoe. Now I'll go into the world and make shoes. So that kind of seemed quite straightforward. But I think when I was at RCA, I really delve a bit deeper into kind of unmaking shoes and trying to challenge a little bit the construction methods and how like shoes were produced. And so because of that, I think these little sparks started like going in my head that I could do something more than just shoe design in a traditional sense, I guess. Right. So yeah, when I graduated, I worked at Adidas, which was an amazing experience. I was in Herzog and their headquarters there. And yeah, learned a lot with them, worked on some really interesting projects, and then was there for a year, and then yeah, decided to set up my own business. And then to kind of support the business, I did some freelance consultancy. So yeah, working with Yeezy, which was another super interesting experience. And I definitely, you have to kind of earn your stripes very quickly and learn very quickly on the job in those sort of environments. So I think it kind of threw me into the deep end of, you know, working with clients and how to manage expectations and things like that.
Right, right. So what do you think caused this spark that you mentioned, this spark or this idea of like really going independently to what I kind of view as going almost against what the industry norm is? Like, where did that come from?
I think I am good at trusting my gut, and I think I have a good like intuition. And there was something, I think what I started on my MA, because at that point I would have started working with waste materials. So I'd been to a recycling center and seen like the absolute mass of waste that they had in that space. And I just thought, this, I've got to do something with this. Like, this could be, this is such a like excellent raw material, but also it's such a beautiful material that's kind of disregarded. And I think because I'm always connected to, I'm always interested in exploring people's relationships with products and relationships with material. And I think that a discarded shoe or like an end of life shoe that someone's thrown away holds so much history in it about somebody's relationship with that product, that I think that's why I'm really drawn to old shoes in that way. So yeah, I think I always just found it interesting. And I think that's kind of the more artistic side of me as well, that I don't come from this very product design kind of avenue. I'm coming from a much more like thoughtful and like emotional point of view, I think, when I make products. So I think that that's where this kind of artistic element comes out. And yeah, I think I just, I felt like an urge that what I'd started at my MA wasn't finished, and that I felt like working in a traditional sense within a bigger business, just I didn't feel like I had the freedom to follow those ideas to fruition. So I just kind of cut and run and hope for the best.
Right.
And now here I am.
Yeah, I guess it was a good decision.
It was scary at the time.
I can imagine. But yeah, I mean, it's a kind of a huge problem that you're bringing attention to, because I mean, I read online, according to the BBC, that more than 23 billion, like billion with a B, pairs of shoes are made every year. That like that's so many more than there is people. And
It's a
so
bit
those,
silly.
yeah, they're gonna end up kind of discarded, right? And so
Definitely.
you mentioned these like recycling centers. How did you even find out like they existed, or like how do you get access to them? Because I feel like most people don't even know of the existence of rag houses and like these recycling centers that just process a lot of like the kind of what gets put under the carpet of the industry per se.
Yeah, definitely. Well, yeah, I mean, first of all, the footwear industry or the fashion industry in general, but it's such a massive problem. It's such a flawed industry. And I think that it's always been super linear. The way that it's set up is just to consume, like design, make, consume, and then that's the end. There's never been a consideration for a circular process really until the last like 10, 15 years that things have started changing. So it definitely feels like there's a lot more access to kind of recycling centers and things now than there ever used to be. So I think if I think about like when I started my MA 2015, I was going to trade really by literally Googling like recycling centers in London, trying to get a appointment with someone, and then just someone showing me like a bag of like muddy shoes and being like, "Do you want these?" And I was like, "Okay." So I think it was, it was definitely a bit of like trial and error in the early days to see who would work with us and how it could work. And Jose, who has worked at Trade ever since I was doing my MA there, has always been a massive supporter of what I'm doing. And to be honest, he's really facilitated our partnership to grow. I think you need someone that takes a bet on you and kind of is like, because if you imagine me, these recycling centers, they're processing so much stuff. They're not really super open to students just like rocking up and being like, "Can I have a bag of old shoes?" So I think that we were really fortunate that Trade were willing to kind of support us in that way and still support us now.
That's amazing. For me, I've also kind of had the experience of, visiting, a rag house and these centers that are filled with just so many clothes and so many, and it's really like impactful because you don't normally see this, and it does get you thinking like, what can be done with this material? Like, how can this be like repurposed? Like the circular approach that you were talking about. Do you believe that like repurposing is the future of production, or do you feel like it's just kind of like a fad? I don't know, like.
Yeah, I think it has to be. And I think there's room for everything. So with us, what we try and do is we really try and show the beauty in the pre-existing material. So we like to keep, the stitch marks, the thread, even the wear marks, the patterns, and kind of marks and memories of the life of the shoe, because I think that helps tell the story of where the shoe has been and where it can go next. Whereas I think that a lot of big recycling movements are kind of focused on chemical recycling or like fiber recycling, breaking everything down into its component pieces, which I think is extremely valid and important. But I almost think you can get three whole more stages of life cycles in before you get to that point. So for me, I really feel like what we are trying to do and this kind of like upcycling movement is the middleman between this like very severe chemical and fiber recycling that will break everything down to its components and obviously landfill. So yeah, that's why I think what we're doing is important. And I also think it the way that we work with materials helps people to understand what the material is. I think when you see our shoes or our products, it's kind of, you get it. You're like, oh, it's a shoe made from shoes.
Right.
Whereas sometimes when everything is broken down into its fibers and components, it's like the act of the material is trying to look like a virgin material. And that in itself can be problematic in some senses, because then people can't differentiate as easily between the two.
Right.
So I don't know. I think there's room for everything, but my perspective is always that I like to show the human side of the material, I guess.
Of course, it tells a story, and there's a certain like beauty to that imperfection. I think there's this quote of Martin Margiela that he said, the beauty of imperfection is more powerful than perfection itself. And I think, yeah, you're definitely expressing that in your work, because you do see the stories that are kind of told through this almost sculpture, wearable sculpture. That
definitely. And I also think that I love that quote for a start. That is just,
yeah,
that's great. Need to get that on my notebook. I always put, I don't know if you ever see on my Instagram, I always put like little quotes on like the front of my notebook to like inspire me. Right now the quote is actually, well, I heard it on a podcast, but someone told me recently that it's Kim Kardashian, which is a bit embarrassing. But is this, I didn't come this far just to come this far.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I'll add that one. Sorry, got distracted by your quote, but the point is, yes, when we started as well, I was very aware that the industry, the sneaker industry in general, was so, you know, sneakers would end up on a shelf like so pristine, so shiny, so devoid of any kind of making, that nobody would really understand the value of where that's come from. And, you know, going back to what you were saying earlier about 23 billion pairs of shoes getting made every year, I think when people can't see the process of making, or aren't exposed to the process of making, then it's really hard to quantify the value of the product.
Right.
So I think for me, I wanted to make shoes that were so obviously handmade that you couldn't get away from the fact that it was like had somebody's thought and ideas and handcraft within the product, because you just didn't see that in sneaker culture, you know, in 2016.
Right.
I do believe that mindset is like shifting now, but it's definitely, a message that we try and promote a lot.
Right. Going back to that quote, I wonder, because I don't know, your story, it's so genuine in the sense of, you know, you saw these recycling centers and then you were like, you know, maybe we could do something from this. But I wonder if, you know, did you ever feel some inspiration, or was there inspiration from the work of Martin Margiela, or was it just you, because he did something similarly with clothes, right? But you were able to take it to the next level. I think he initially, for his first collections, would just like paint on top of shoes. These were like the shoes that were presented, and they were like new per se, but they weren't new. You were able to take it like completely 180 and actually make new pairs completely, like down to the sole being recycled, which is something that I don't think anyone else has really like figured out to do at that level.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I think, people like Margiela, like Vivienne Westwood, like you see those kind of names, like as you know, I had a very traditional like fashion BA, so you're always inspired by like those sort of big brands. And I think anyone for me that was kind of going against the status quo or doing something that either people didn't expect or people didn't really want them to do, I think that's those sort of kind of activists within like the fashion space have always appealed to me. And yeah, definitely Margiela. I mean, he did like the glove jackets and things like that. So he was always using alternative materials as a way to, you know, create newness. So I think that naturally, that kind of repurposing idea has always existed within fashion. So it's exciting that now it's having like a bit of a resurgence and people are starting to see the value of it, not just as an aesthetic thing, but also as a kind of culturally relevant and important thing, I guess.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. It's super important. Yeah. What are some other like artists you would say that inspire your work or just like your creativity per se?
I think I'm, I always am more inspired, I would say, by like artists and designers outside of the fashion realm. So someone that I always come back to is Rachel White-Reed, who is, do you know Rachel White-Reed?
I don't.
She's an amazing like installation artist. And she basically, what the work that I always love from her, she makes casts from like household objects. So she would like cast a bath, for example, in plaster, but then the exhibition would be the cast, not the bath. So she always she kind of reverses the process of like sculpting, and she always shows like the interior of things. So she would like cast a whole house, and then the exhibition would be the inside of it, would be the cast. So you'd have like the mark from where you take the fireplace off and it's all burnt, or you peel like the wallpaper and it like gets stuck. So all things like that, basically. I'm sure I could do a much better description of that, but yeah, she's always someone that I love because she kind of like has hacking the process, but like in a different field. So I love her. Who else do I love? Think what books I've got in the studio. I think also painters, I'm always quite inspired by, like Jenny Saville was one of my really early inspirations. Her like naked women that she paints that are like super textural. Even like Francis Bacon, like Lucian Freud, like those sort of people, they use their material in such an expressive way. And it's like really tactile and jumping from the page. I think that's my, those are the sort of people that I find more inspiration from. And I think that's also because I'm inspired so much by the shoes themselves. When I receive like the material, that's almost, the material of the old shoe is like inspiration enough to make the product.
Right.
So then those other like artistic references kind of come in as a way to like layer fabrics or create color palettes, things like that. We're always inspired by kind of artists for our color palettes as well. I think a lot of the work we do is basically like building a big collage or big painting.
Right, right. Yeah. What are some of the like the craziest reactions from people that you've gotten after they see that you cut a specific shoe up, or what was that shoe that has gotten really like that kind of reaction? Because yeah, we really just go at it,
we just go for it.
Yeah.
I think it's really funny because I've always made sure, I think because I don't come from a sneakerhead kind of background, that I've never had, I've never placed like a lot of value on the different sneaker products that maybe other people would place a lot of value on. So I think because of that, that's helped me to stay kind of naive to the hierarchy of the products. And that allows us to create these like crazy combinations that other people that were maybe more into the sneaker game would maybe think is sacrilege or kind of shy away from in some way. So whenever we create material, we're always trying to have no hierarchy in pieces. And even the any pieces that we deconstruct that has branding on, it all just becomes a shape within the puzzle of the design. It's not like, oh, that's a, you know, whatever, a Gucci piece, so we need to make sure that's in pride of place. We kind of just build the material and think, use more the shapes and the colors to build the design rather than like what the cultural significance of the material, maybe, right, is a good way to call it. So yes, but we definitely do get reactions when we cut up like Off-White, Prada, Gucci, like those sort of things obviously do create a bit of a stir because people aren't used to it. Mm-hmm. But what's amazing is we do, because we make bespoke shoes as well for individual clients, and some of our bespoke customers, they send us shoes like that, which is amazing. So one of my most early bespoke, it was a Prada, I don't know the name of the silhouette, but it was like a Prada low top sneaker, and then it was like the Cactus Jack Air Force Ones, yeah, Off-White Air Force One. What else was in there? Comme des Garçons Nike shoe as well. So he literally just sent us basically his archive and was like, make something out of this. So when we have bespoke customers like that, that really trust us and feel confident that what we're going to do is something better.
Yeah. Yeah. That, yeah, I can imagine how much, putting that back into like how much that and final shoe cost can be what gets people's reaction. But truly, like, I don't know, there's another quote by Picasso that he said that every act of creation is first an act of destruction. And I think that's very much true and very much applies to your work.
That's me. I think that's the best way to find out how something's made, to take it apart.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that was really the early days of when I was doing my MA. I'd kind of had this really traditional upbringing at Northampton where I'd learned like how to make a shoe and learned everything like the proper way of how to make a shoe. And then when I got to RPA, I kind of tried to unlearn how to make a shoe. So much of my first year of RPA was just like destroying things.
Right.
And I remember I made this project and it was all about like spaghettification. Like when you go into a black hole, all your atoms will get stretched into a single string of molecules.
Right.
So this project that I did, this is very like art school MA project, was all about like spaghettification. So I made this shoe that was completely exaggerated and like all the components like strung out into bits.
Wow.
And it kind of makes so much sense how I ended up here,
basically. Yeah. It seems like, yeah, every step of the way was just, yeah, trusting your gut and it led you here.
Definitely. But,
I mean, through that journey, I'm sure, like, especially because you were kind of going against the status quo, per se, I'm sure there were some struggles that you faced. Like, what were some of those struggles that you faced along the way?
I think definitely when I was studying my MA, I kind of had this idea that I, you know, to use these old shoes basically. And I did face a lot of backlash around the idea of actually using the sneakers as the raw material. And so many people kind of advised me as to like, why don't you use those as inspiration to make something new? Or why don't you use the patterns or shapes to make a new product? And that was really hard for quite a long period of time because I felt like I was so sure that that wasn't the point. Like, right, there was no point in making that. I was like, that's what everyone else is doing. That's not interesting. That's not innovative in any kind of way. So I think I've definitely had to learn along the way, again, like what I said earlier, to kind of trust my gut and just, I don't know, just have a little pause, I think, when like people are giving you advice. Like so many people, when you do your own thing, will try and give you advice, tell you how to do it better, tell you how they think you should do it, how to run a business, how to, you know, all these sorts of things. I'm sure you experience a similar
Right.
thing.
Always the people that are not doing it that feel like they have a say.
Yeah, or just give you like a one-liner, like, oh, why don't you do this? And you're like, great. So I think that you just will always experience that when you're going off and you're kind of treading your own path. So it's just important to build a good relationship with yourself, I think, to be able to take a moment and think, is this useful? Is this what I want? Or is this, you know, somebody's got my best intentions at heart, but actually it's not the right thing that I need to be doing. So, yeah, that didn't really answer the question, but I think basically just
no,
it's hard.
I think it definitely did. Because yeah, that is part of the creative process, to kind of ignore the outside noise and try to just hone in on what your vision is. Because truly, like, the only person that does see your vision is you yourself, like, right in here. And truly, like, even as you, like, begin to try and communicate that vision, like, it's almost never as clear as it is up in here. And so it staying true to that, I think, yes, it's super important.
I remember as well, I can't remember who said it to me. I think it might have been one of my tutors, but when I was kind of first starting to do all this, and they said, if it means something to you, it will mean something to someone else. And that's always stuck with me.
Wow.
Because I think it's just nice to, sometimes when you think like, oh, what the hell am I doing? Like, nobody gets it. And it's like, if it means something to you, it will probably mean something to someone else.
Wow. That's
quite nice.
That's beautiful. Yeah, no, and I think it's true. It's very reflective of how I've seen you kind of approach everything you do. Just like, even meeting you in person, you seem like very grounded.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, it's so common to, especially like fashion industry and whatnot, and people let different things get to their head and kind of get on their high horse. But I think it is super important to dig deep into oneself and find out why you're approaching the different creative endeavors.
And I think it's not also sometimes it's not straightforward, and you might not necessarily know like what the answer is, but I think you have to try. And I feel like my kind of purpose is to try and understand what I'm doing, because then you can do it better, I guess. But I also think that this industry, you know, especially in the past, has been filled a lot with a lot of people that, I don't know, there's a lot of like negativity or kind of conflict and competition, which I think has its place. But for me, I just feel like I'm trying to build a community and a brand and a business that promotes a different way of the fashion industry being, you know, where everyone can be kind and collaborate and support each other. And I think that's why I do give a lot of myself, like even in interviews and stuff. Like, sometimes I'm like, oh, I said way too much, but I think it's nice to, I don't know, be real with people, I guess.
Yeah. I think that definitely, again, to what you said earlier, like if it means something to you, people will connect with it. And I think that's very true. Speaking about said challenges and whatnot, I know there's like a lot of creatives out there that are listening, and they wanting to, you know, pursue their creativity in different ways. What advice would you really give to an upcoming creative that, you know, might look up to your work and what you've created?
I think I remember when I was at uni and people used to always tell me to build a network. And I would be like, what does that mean? And I think that really what I've realized over the years is a network is basically your friends and people in the business, like, or in a business that you're interested in, that do cool work that you like. And I think I've just learned over the years, like, the more enthusiasm and like genuine support you can give to people in the industry that you look up to, the more it will come around and people will support you. And I think, you know, like, for example, with Birkenstock, where I've been hosting these workshops, I've been really adamant and saying to people, you know, that are coming to the workshops, like, you've got to be there, you've got to go to the things, you've got to meet the people and just say hello, and you never know what's going to happen. I feel like I've had so much work, so many opportunities, and made so many friends just from, I don't know, putting yourself out there. And even when you're scared, I think I try and like dare myself to like go to an event or something.
Yeah.
Even at Fashion Week, like when we met, that event at Daniel's bag launch, yeah. I had done so much work in the morning. I was super stressed. I had no makeup on and I didn't look nice. And I was like, there's going to be a lot of cool people at this event and I'm scared. I don't want to go because I don't look nice and I don't feel like confident. But I just kind of dared myself and I was like, just go there. Like, people are not going to care if you've got makeup on or not. And it's just, I think you, I don't know, sometimes people think that like when you're a few years into business, you've got it all figured out, but really everyone's just kind of making it up as they go along. So I think don't be put off to try and just give it a go.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. It's true. I think that's some great advice. Especially, I mean, coming from someone that you've designed probably, or you're probably one of the people that has designed the most amount of unique shoes in the world, if not the person who has created the most amount of different pairs. yeah, so obviously this comes from your completely like unique approach to creating footwear, but obviously this also presents new challenges per se. For example, like the communication of each and one of these different pairs is, you know, can be a challenge, right?
Yeah,
it seems you've found like a way to at least like communicate your work. How do you approach this? How do you approach communicating your work? And
I mean, it's been trial and error, to be honest. I think we, as we've developed the collections, and now we're starting to make slightly bigger productions of our signature sneakers, that we have started to realize, just really from listening to our community, listening to feedback of what people want. So in the early days when we sold Palimpsest, we just showed like the one picture of like the white low top sneaker basically, and said like, you will get a version of this, but the patchwork will be different. And luckily, I feel so lucky that all of our kind of early adopters of our brand are very trusting, and they're also very, they understand quite deeply like the process. So they, luckily everybody was, you know, happy with the shoes that they got. But through more people getting interested in the brand, you know, some people have said to us like, oh, I really love the patchworks when they look like this, or I really like it when it's slightly more cream, or it's slightly more shiny, or and those things will come naturally, will naturally change throughout the range. So anyway, from this season, or from last season, we decided to showcase every single pair in the production. So then we did like the photos basically of all the sides and all the angles of every single pair, which was a lot of work, but it allowed us to it allowed everybody to have that really bespoke experience where they feel like they're getting an individual pair that's the only one that exists in the world, and it's especially for them.
Wow.
Yeah. Sorry, there's a motorbike outside. Is that really loud?
No worries. I can hear it.
It's literally right next to me.
Yeah. Yeah, you mentioned the palimpsest, this being your like signature silhouette, I would say. Yeah, why is it called this way? Like, what's the story behind that?
It's so funny because it was our first shoe, I felt so much pressure to give it like a really good name. And basically palimpsest is such a nice word that I first found out about actually when I was studying on my MA. There was a PhD student who was looking at shoes as palimpsest, basically. And it was a really, really interesting research that she was doing. And then that's when I first discovered the word palimpsest. And then since then, I saw it kind of like popping up. And essentially, it means something reused or altered that still bears traces of its original form. So as a word, as a way to kind of encapsulate what we're doing, I thought it made a lot of sense. And also a palimpsest scroll used to be something that they would use like back in the Roman Empire it was basically a skin, like a cow skin, leather skin, that they would use to make a scroll, and they would write important documents on the palimpsest. And then because the way that the ink is written into the leather, after a period of years it would fade, and then they would reuse it. So you would have all these important documents layered on top of each other on this piece of leather. So I just felt like I had a lot of different meanings as to why, and it made sense for me.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm quite arty, so I like an arty name.
Yeah, it's super true to the story. Do you think this has helped you, per se, to communicate your work? Because there's like this story that's so kind of connected to it, and it's easy to almost interpret that story.
I think so. I think we are very... transparent, I guess, with like what we do and how we make the products. So there's always that narrative that kind of goes across everything that we create. To be honest, I don't know if using the word palimpsest really helped or hindered us, because it's quite a complicated word and it's hard to say. But I still stand by it. I like it.
Yeah, I like it too, especially like after hearing, you know, the history of like what that word means and whatnot, it very much aligns with your brand as a whole. And I think, yeah, it's the idea of like, you know, having this story can really help, I do believe, for creatives to be put their story out there in a way, because then even when people like mention like, who is Helen Kirkham, like it's quite easy, like, oh yeah, she makes these shoes from old shoes and whatnot. It's like, but that in itself is a story, and like, you know, you can go way deeper into that story. But it's like easy for people to almost like relate to that and understand it.
Definitely.
I believe, at least. I don't know.
No, I think so as well. Sometimes I feel like my whole identity is tied up in a shoe, but it's fine.
that's why...
that could be a good end.
The furniture.
Yeah, exactly. And now we're trying to expand. But now we know how to make the material, we can literally apply it to anything. So it's quite exciting.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's quite beautiful to just, because yeah, I do believe like some furniture would look very cool.
Yes.
With your different patterns.
I hope so.
Yeah.
Definitely. And we started making plant pots as well. So that's our first sellable little kind of bit of furniture that we started making. And we actually, those plant pots are all made from the waste of our production. So we get the factory to save all the scraps. They send the scraps back to us, and then we make the plant pots.
Wow. Wow, that's
So there you
beautiful.
go. Always thinking.
I guess one last question I have for you. What are some, we like to ask this question after interviews to kind of, be on the lookout. What are some upcoming creatives that we should, look out for or coming up? Want to shout out?
Well, I didn't plan in advance, but off the top of my head, I know there's an incredible another British designer called Tiga Akinola that does, you might already follow her. She does amazing. She makes a lot of bags from like Patagonia fleeces.
Nice.
And she does a lot of things like that. So she's doing really well at the moment and seems to be getting really recognized for her aesthetic, which is great. So love her. So definitely follow her. Another creative that we work quite closely with is a Dutch designer called Sanne Visser. And she, I can send you her, or I can put it on your little notes and then you'll know how to spell it.
Awesome.
Can I type on that? No. Anyway, I'll do it after. But Studio Sanne Visser is her Instagram, and she is super interesting. She's doing a lot of work with human hair, so she basically collects hair and like uses it to make products, and also just to make ropes mostly. So she's just doing some very unusual and interesting things. She actually, we collaborated with her on those shoelace bags. She made the handles for us out of shoelaces, not out of hair, but she used her technique of rope making to make them. So those are two off the top of my head that I think are cool cats.
Yeah, those sound super cool. Yeah, those bags turned out absolutely great. Like
Yeah, they're so
they're
good. They're going to go on the website soon, in the next like month or so. I think we'll try and get them on the website so then people can buy them.
exciting. Yeah. Well, thank you.
Amazing.